listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. And now here are your hosts, Doug Padgett, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
Good afternoon. Welcome all. Doug Padgett and Brett Johnson in today from the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Doug here. I'm coming to you from North Carolina, and just going to bring this up real quickly that on Thursday I'm going to be over in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm going to be at the River Bend Maximum Security Prison, which, among other things, houses Tennessee's death row. And one of the inmates there is someone named Don Johnson, and I had the privilege of meeting Don and a number of other death row inmates a while back, and I correspond with Don through writing. And Don is scheduled to be executed by the state of Tennessee on Thursday, and it's scheduled for roughly 50 hours from now. The state of Tennessee is going to execute Don. He murdered his wife in 1985, and there's no dispute if he murdered his wife or not. Don's not disputing that. He is asking for the governor, Bill Lee, who's the new governor of Tennessee, to stay his execution. Yesterday, there's a lot of things that go into how the rights of a condemned criminal in our country and in the state of Tennessee. And the Supreme Court yesterday denied any clemency for Don Johnson, and so now it's in the hands of Tennessee Governor Bill Lee. And if this is something that matters to you, and you'd like to give a phone call, I'll invite you to do that. You know, this has a personal implication for me, not only because I'm a human being, like we all are. So I think we're all personally implicated in this, but we're all members of the society that we call this United States of America. And so when in our country, even though it's not in our state of Minnesota, when one of the citizens is going to, by planned homicide, have their life ended by the power of the government, that should catch all of our attention, both as a civic action and also as a moral action. And in a lot of ways, we're implicated by this, and all of us as citizens become part of this. When our government does anything the government does, whether we voted for them or whether we feel like they represent us or not, we are a of the people, for the people, by the people representative form of democracy. And so the actions of our government call all of us into their actions. And it's one of the more difficult parts of this civic life that we have together. And so we're all in it in that way. For me personally, because of my connection and friendship with Don, it feels even more deep and even more heavy. And so this afternoon, the governor has a decision to make. He can stay the execution or he can sign a death warrant. And just to know how this all goes, because I think it adds to some of the starkness and the boldness and the reality of our prison system, our punishment system, our use of life and death, and even our engagement in war, that the governor signs a document that issues an order to end the life of one of the citizens of Tennessee, in this case, Don Johnson. And that has to be signed off on, you know, by the governor and by others, so that when the homicide happens, it's not a criminal activity. And, you know, if you just think about this for a minute, what Don's going to be executed for is for the wrongful death of Cynthia Johnson, who was his wife at the time. And for that, he's going to be executed and he's going to be killed. But the people who do that homicide, commit that homicide, are not implicated by the law. They're seen as fulfilling the law. And this is the place where for a lot of us who condemn the death penalty cannot find the moral or even the ethical rationale how killing someone for killing someone can be right. Now, I know people do make that argument, and I've heard many of those arguments, and I try to listen carefully to them. But I have concluded that the argument carries no moral weight, and that if we're going to condemn the murder of someone, then we should not use homicide as the means of doing so. And I'm not using homicide loosely. Any time a person is executed in this country, the cause of death is indicated on their death certificate, rather, as a homicide. And there are different kinds of homicides. And in this case, we declare that there's a legal or justified homicide. You would get the same kind of thing if a police officer were to shoot and kill someone. It gets declared as a justifiable homicide. So these are actions. And when the action is predetermined, when it's set out, it creates a culture. Now, we're executing less people in this country than we have at other times. Our executions in the United States are really limited to a handful of states, Texas being the most frequent. 13 executions in 2018, and they're already leading with three in the calendar year 2019. This will be Tennessee's first execution in 2019. But if you'd like to call the governor, I would love for you to, if you feel like you want to be part of this. Area code 615-741-2001. That gets you through to the governor of Tennessee. You can press one. You just leave a voicemail. No one answers the phone there. You don't have to talk to anyone. You're not going to be conflicted. But the governor's still making this decision. Even just right now, I just received a text message with the advocates there in Tennessee who are saying, still haven't heard anything from the governor, which could be a good sign. It could be a sign that the governor's taking this seriously. A number of religious people are pushing really hard to call the governor to stop this execution, and of course all the other people who have other objections to the death penalty are going on. So anyway, I wanted to bring that up today. You know, the listeners of this show and this station mean a lot to me, of course, and so does Don. And so the connection between a person that I know and a person who's a citizen of our country that's going to be executed, it makes this personal. This is not the sole issue here. For those who wonder, and people do, and they should, because so often race plays a big role in who's prosecuted and who's punished in our society. In this case, Don is a white man, and it's more often that white men are executed in this country than any other group of people, even though based on the proportion of the population, more people of color are in death row based on the number of people of color in our country. But white men are often executed, and that's the case here. I'm not to say that there's not a racial bias in our society and in our prison system. There is, but very often people they want to know that question because it can add a different layer of complexity. So regardless of where you stand right now, if you're willing to call the governor, Bill Lee of Tennessee, and give him a call, 615-741-2001. I'd love to have your support and encouragement to do that. And of course, you know, if you ever want to call here into the station, 952-946-6205 is the number here. We're going to talk about a number of things going on in the state legislature today in our own state. Now, fortunately, we've had the good sense, since the late 1800s to keep executions out of our pattern of treating one another and penalizing and punishing criminals in the state of Minnesota, and I think it's wise. It's not true at the federal level. You might know that the federal government continues to maintain the right to execute citizens of our own country, and I am avidly against the use of death for gaining our means. That's part of what makes me an anti-war a thinker, and also against the death penalty, because I think that any society that uses human death as its means to accomplish its ends needs to both look at the ends and look at the means, and it calls both of those into crisis. And Brett, I'll tell you, and I know I've brought this up to you a number of times off air and so on, and hearing the conversation that Matt was having, you know, about guns and all, it's amazing to me that in my entire adult life, or my entire life, I'm a 52-year-old man, and in my entire life, we've been talking in this country about what we're going to do about gun violence, about guns, and about executions and the death penalty. And it just continues to linger in our society. And it really feels to me like we need to solve some of these very tactical and specific questions in our society if we think we're ever going to move forward into dealing with the other things that need to be solved in our society. That's from the 19 from just in my life, you know, I was born in 1966. So when I started to hear about any of this stuff, even as a child, in the early 1970s, the push for gun control and debates in ninth grade. When I first became a death penalty opponent was because we were assigned debate topics in ninth grade. I don't know if they did that in your ninth grade class, but, you know, back in the day over in Golden Valley Middle School, we were assigned topics. And I didn't get to pick the topic. I was just given the death penalty, and I was put on the opponent's side, being against the death penalty. So I started doing research in ninth grade and figuring all this stuff out and what I thought about it. And I was convinced from that day forward that on all the arguments. So we've been trying to help people think about this as a society for so very long. And you might know a couple of years ago, I was arrested at the Supreme Court for protesting the death penalty at the Supreme Court. And we had a court hearing. We were found guilty of violating Supreme Court laws and rules about where we could do our protest. And the judge was, before our sentencing, he asked each of us if we wanted to say anything to the court about why we did this. And there were 17 of us, one of whom was a death row exoneree, meaning he was falsely convicted of a crime, was on death row for 26 years, and then was exonerated and set free. He was 153rd exoneree in the United States on the death row. And when the judge asked us to say what led us to the crime that we'd committed of violating the statute of where you could protest at the Supreme Court, one of the things that I said was not only from ninth grade was I convinced of this, but as a Christian person, as a pastor, I believe Christians have been opposed to the death penalty since A.D. 33. And that's because for a lot of Christians, the way they understand the story of Jesus is that he was a falsely accused and falsely executed person. And the whole narrative of the Jesus story is to use grace and forgiveness and life as the alternative to death and punishment. And so the people who follow in the teachings in the way of one who was executed ought to speak on behalf of others who are going to be executed, whether that's by execution by a state of lethal injection, as is scheduled to happen to Don on Thursday, or the use of war as a means to execute somebody else so that you can find the victory that you're seeking. It really does call people of the Christian faith, and people of any other faith, of course, or of other ways of thinking. So, hey, that's my editorial and my personal plea and call to the good people who listen to the repartee of what for me is a significant and heavy topic on this day. And in 48 hours, I want my friend Don to be alive and not to be killed. But we'll be back here on the repartee after the break on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office.
And I'm Rachel Chambliot. Did you know a lot of people are afraid of the dentist? You don't need to be afraid of my dad. He makes going to the dentist comfortable and even fun.
We don't care if you're a dental regular or haven't seen a dentist in years. We just want to make you comfortable and get you out of pain.
If you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
As a teacher, having a foster grandparent in my room, it enables me to have an extra set of hands.
Foster grandparents are role models, tutors, and friends to children with exceptional needs.
It's been fantastic having Grandma Freddie in our room.
It is the best feeling in the world.
I'm a best student because of her.
To learn more about how to become a foster grandparent and help children in need, call 1-800-942-2677 or visit Senior Corps at nationalservice.gov.
You can't go through a day without hearing about healthcare reform. St. Paul Corner Drug is here to help you navigate the ever-changing healthcare landscape. We are your advocate in getting much-needed prescription medication covered under your insurance plan. Need to choose a different plan? There is no reason to feel like you are drowning in the system. St. Paul Corner Drug can make simple work out of finding you a plan that best suits your needs. You can rest assured at St. Paul Corner Drug, pharmacy the way it should be.
Hi, this is Representative Raymond Dean, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
Hey, that's a nice little endorsement there from the representative. And the representatives have a lot going on. The state legislature, of course, is in session and trying to get some agreements. You know, they just wait till the final week. And Brett, I was saying this to Hunter yesterday. It just really drives me crazy, frankly, that they're in session for all this time, and even when they're not in session, you know, they're working hard, and the governor works hard, and aides, and there's a whole infrastructure to get a budget together, and they wait till the last week. And I just think as voters and as citizens, we need to start demanding that they give legislators and they give the citizens more time to look at the budget before they pass it. They jam this stuff all up right at the very end, and then they end up sliding things through, and then legislators throw their hands in the air and say to people, hey, we couldn't get to everything. We kind of got a little jammed up there at the end. Or even worse, they can't come to an agreement, and they end up in a special session and try to shut down the funding of the government. And it's become so normative. Everybody expects it. They kind of shake their heads like, oh, well, there we go again. But there's no pressure to have to get it done in time before they vote. So I don't know what the pressure that we could bring on them. But I think any of us who talk to our legislators, if you agree with your legislator and you've got a good relationship, or if you feel like you're at angst with your legislator, I think we should all ask that they get this done in a more timely fashion. Just even that, even just the process, like, for the love, if they could just get the process done. And in a few minutes, we're going to talk to Kenza from Take Action Minnesota. They're doing some of this, some of this work. But I wanted to underscore one other issue around healthcare costs. I have a friend who works in elderly care, so in care facilities, that kind of thing. And she is really dismayed that Governor Walz is asking for a cut in the budget that goes to the elderly and to nursing homes. And seemingly it's the, and she's a confident Democrat, but she feels like it is the Republicans that are having to fight hard to protect the money for seniors and for nursing homes and so on in the budget. So I just want to put the word out that that you should ask your legislator where they are on supporting elderly funding for healthcare and for especially in rural America, because it doesn't make any sense that they want to try to bend the cost curve to remove, I think it's $68 million from the budget, and have a lot of that fall on nursing homes and on elderly care. It's a really big deal, because healthcare costs a lot in this country. It costs a lot in our state, and it costs the state a lot of money. It's a big ticket item, and so I know it can be attractive as the place where you're going to go look to cut those funds. But look, if you don't raise taxes to pay for that, that directly is going to come out of the rest of the citizenry's budgets. This is not like something, you know, healthcare and elderly care is not something that we have a choice to pay for. It's going to be paid for. And, you know, it can be paid for in the collective and supported in the collective to spread that out more evenly in our society, or it can be paid for by individuals and then higher costs as those individuals can't afford it and experience either the costs of financial trouble, or they experience needing to take more emergency care to deal with healthcare. So we're going to talk about that a bit here with Kenza when she joins us. But I want to sort of put a special emphasis on how important it is to think about elderly care. And my friend Shelley, who raised this issue, she felt like, that those people who work in the elderly care areas just they don't really have any advocates. They don't feel like they can trust the Republicans, and they don't feel like the Democrats are coming around to their side. And Brent, I find that a little bit shocking. you know, that they feel like that the Republican governor or the Democratic governor and the Democratic House is not supporting them as much as the Republican Senate is.
Yeah, I can kind of see where they're coming from, because this will actually piggyback on your one point about stuff getting stuffed in bills that we don't know about. So a lot of what funds MinnesotaCare, which also helps elderly people with their health care costs, is funded from what's called, I think of the provider tax on medical devices, which is going to sunset in 2020. And the reason why it's sunsetting is that this provision was stuck in a bill way back in 2011. And I think it kind of snuck under the table. No one was really paying attention to it because, again, we were rushing through a bill. And at the time, the Democrats and Mark Dayton, who was the governor at the time, weren't able to veto this out or look and see that this provision was in that bill. So I think it kind of piggybacks on your original point, too. And this is why maybe they're feeling some angst, because a lot of that funding they're getting from MinnesotaCare could potentially be lost because of this sunset of the provider tax.
Is that right? See, I didn't know that. This is why people should listen to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Because, you know, when that repartee gets going, you pick up little gems like that. So the idea that some of the funding crisis could be coming because you said in 2011 the sunset provision was put in place? Right. And I guess you could see how, like, 7 years feels like a long time, right? So people would say, like, okay, we can't deal with that now. Let's just bury it in the bill and we'll deal with it later. And then it never gets dealt with later. And this is just the issue. You know, a lot of times Republicans especially will say this. They'll say, hey, we have to run the state government the way we run our home budgets. And when I do my home budget, I can't overspend the money that I have in my bank account. I have to reduce my costs, right? And then anybody who's, you know, knows anything about how government budgets work, or business budgets, or corporation budgets, is they don't run like a family budget, right? There's a whole lot of other factors that go into running a budget, on when you're going to spend, when you're going to pay for things and when you're not, and how you amortize different expenses and so on. So this idea that's just as simple as a family home budget is just another pejorative way that Republicans tend to speak to the citizenry. But what we could learn is, if you don't pay attention to these details and you just rush a decision through, you just sign a quick contract, you just enter into an agreement, and it doesn't have the details that you want in it, it's going to come back to haunt you. It's going to show up. And but to your point, this thing, it's a great example that all these years later, now this is showing up, and the environment apparently doesn't seem right that you could reintroduce a tax on medical devices. And I think there's no doubt we should tax medical devices, but I also think we should be taxing wealth, like, I don't know, like things that, you know, are purchased by the wealthiest people in our society. Like, one of the ways you can tax wealth is, well, you can just straight up, like, tax the wealth, or you can tax the use of the wealth in a much more significant way. So, you know, boats, luxury cars, houses, cabins, this kind of thing. You could put a separate tax on there to be sure that we're distributing income more evenly in the most needed places in our society. But these are the long-term conversations that people should be having, and we can't have them because what will happen if you ask your legislator before you get to the end of the session, what can we do about this? They'll say, well, let's wait till we get to the end of the session. Right. When the real action happens, then we'll be forced to make a decision. And then as soon as they are forced to make a decision, then they go running off and say, well, we didn't have enough time to really look at the issues. And it's just maddening. And this is one of the few times I'm willing to say anything close to, you know, pox on both their houses. But Democrats do this and Republicans do this, and it needs to end. So anyway, when we come back here, we'll talk a little bit about how we have to protect the money that goes into our, has been going into our healthcare structure, and keeping our healthcare systems nonprofit here in Minnesota, with Kenza from Take Action Minnesota, after the break on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
This is David the Trucker, and we're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, because that's what we do here. Celebrate all things progressive.
Next time on Velocity Talk, the Big Bang, before and after.
But, John, the Big Bang created time. There can't have been anything before the Big Bang.
But if there were no time, there would be no change. But a Big Bang sounds a lot like change to me.
If the beginning of time is an event, doesn't it have to occur at a time?
The Big Bang, next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM 950.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I've been a craftsman for 25 years. You'll not find someone who loves their job more than me. The process of painting your home could not be easier. Go to nickslavik.com, click on the button Paint My Walls or Paint My Cabinets. I'll personally be in contact with you to get an estimate, either in-home or a free virtual estimate. We move furniture, vacuum, sweep, dust, and put your home back the way we found it. We're not like other contractors.
Tap, taste, and treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is all digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 50. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 75. Thursday, a chance for rain with a high near 81. And Friday, partly sunny with a high near 70. Flood the room with sunlight this spring, but not noise from neighbors damaging UV rays or allergies. Indo window inserts from Green Home Doctors press in your existing windows for an airtight seal and protect your art and furniture from sun damage so they stay vibrant. Learn more about the Green Home Doctors Indo inserts by visiting greenhomedr.com.
Humans, this is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio, and you are listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
Hey, welcome back, all. We're going to be chatting here with Kenza from Take Action Minnesota. Hi, Kenza. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Doug. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, this is really great. We saw this press release that you put out today, and it follows up on, a press conference that the Attorney General had, raising this issue that in the state of, and this is a little complicated, and actually I was caught a little flat-footed, I wish I'd known about this earlier, that the state of Minnesota is considering allowing for-profit health insurance organizations. Currently we only have nonprofit, but there's a consideration to allow some for-profits, and they could convert some existing nonprofits into for-profit organizations and take money that sits in reserves right now in those for-profits into the for-profit or into the nonprofit and put in the for-profit, and therefore somebody makes profit. All right, did that sound overly confusing?
did I say that right?
Okay, that's really complicated.
Just kidding. We can back up. We can back
Let's
up.
Let's do it. Let's back up because it's overwhelmingly, and it just seems so absurd that that it's almost feels impossible to have this argument in the state of Minnesota.
Exactly.
So talk us through it.
So historically, Minnesota has always decided that health insurance should not be a for-profit business. This is part of our values. We believe in fairness and the common good, and point blank, the money that we spend for healthcare should be used for care. It shouldn't go to shareholders or executive salaries or bonuses. So it was very surprising in 2017 when kind of in the dark of night, there was no public hearing, no public discussion, the GOP legislature snuck in a repealer language that's changed Minnesota law so that we no longer would require nonprofit health insurance companies, or we would no longer ban, rather, for-profit health insurance companies, which is a little bit confusing considering that United Health Group is based in Minnesota, but we've never allowed United Health Group to manage our public programs or actually sell insurance to Minnesotans. So this happened in the dark of night in 2017. It was signed into law with absolutely no regulations or guidelines around it. But the Attorney General back then, Attorney General Swanson, had been a big champion and had flagged that this was an issue that had happened in other states where when these nonprofit companies were allowed to merge into for-profits or be acquired by for-profits, they could walk away with billions of dollars that were funded through taxpayers, funded through their charitable tax status, and it allowed another 15 other states, these executives, to walk away with golden parachutes, tens of millions of dollars that didn't belong to them. So that was the kind of the backstory. In 2017, we ended up getting a moratorium put on for 2 more years, so that bought us a little bit of time. And now we're at 2019, where the moratorium will be lifted this year, and if the legislature doesn't act this session, it will be perfectly legal for nonprofit health plans to convert to for-profits and walk away with our money.
Okay, it just seems outrageous. Like how was this snuck in the dark of night? Do you happen to know the details?
It was actually connected to the reinsurance bill in January of 2017. So it was a kind of an emergency bill to provide relief to Minnesotans who were seeing their health insurance premiums on the private market skyrocket. So everybody on both parties wanted to take some sort of action to provide some relief. There were some tax credits for Minnesotans that helped a lot of families. But in that bill was just a one-sentence repealer language that really changed the trajectory of health insurance in Minnesota. And I'll say there's a few different issues going on here. We've got some legislators like Senator John Marty, who's been a real champion, saying we need to put the ban back in place. There's no reason why we should have for-profit health insurance companies doing business in the state. They only exist to enrich themselves. So there's a push going on this session to reinstate the ban. But either way, we need to make sure that if nonprofits, insurance companies do want to become for-profits, that they're not allowed to legally walk away with billions of dollars in assets that belong to the public.
It's amazing. Okay, so one sense is this moment of regret that how did that happen and what can we do to make it possible, keep it only possible to be a nonprofit if you're going to manage a healthcare plan here.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about why.
Can I add one thing, Doug?
Yeah, please. Yeah, of course.
So the other technical but important issue that's been going on too that happened after the law changed in 2017 is that it also became technically legal for nonprofit health plans like Medica to funnel tens of millions of dollars out of state companies, for-profit companies, and there's nothing that our state could do to stop it. So on the one hand, they're getting our money for health insurance premiums and money that's supposed to go to healthcare for Minnesotans, and that's really, they're able to do whatever they want with it since that law changed. So the domino effect has been bigger than I think anybody anticipated and really violates a lot of our values as Minnesotans, especially as we see healthcare continuing to be such a big issue that Minnesotans are facing, especially due to the rising cost of healthcare.
All right. So you're saying that even if a new company doesn't convert to being a for-profit, if they're part of an organization that has a for-profit in another state, then they could take some of the monies that that they have control of in Minnesota in this reserve and move it to other states?
Yep. Which can go to executive salaries. It can go to advertising and billboards. Can go to just about anything. And there's really, we know that Medica has transferred $175 million because that's what they They did report that to the state, but they could be transferring more that we just don't know.
Okay, so
it's time for single-payer health care, isn't it?
Well, it sure seems like. I mean, it seems like there's so many things that could make all of this system better as we currently have it, right?
It just
feels like everybody's throwing their hands up and has given up. All right, here's something.
When we look at companies like United Health Group, too, we saw this spring's a big class action lawsuit in California against United Health Group. We saw U.S. Congress bringing in United Health Group to talk about fraud for selling junk health insurance plans. Like, we're talking about regular people and the health insurance that they need versus a Fortune 10 company that operates globally. I think it's our government's responsibility to put more power into the hands of people and kind of say enough of having corporations control so much of our healthcare.
So when Keith Ellison did a press conference about this, in the article that I read about that, it indicates that at the end of 2018, Minnesota nonprofit HMOs, and how many HMOs are there in Minnesota? How many organizations is that?
There's about five major ones.
All right, so roughly five, maybe some of the smaller ones. They held, and this number just shook my head, $6.7 billion in reserves. $6.7 billion in reserves. Okay, so for people who don't, who often don't think about all of these details, to be a nonprofit doesn't mean that you can't earn profits. Being a nonprofit means that no individual would benefit from the profits of the organization. But obviously, nonprofit organizations can earn more money than they spend, and they have to have a deal about what they do with it. They can't distribute that to their shareholders or to any individual who owns it. But why do these HMOs have nearly $7 billion in reserves?
No, I think they would say that healthcare, their costs fluctuate a lot year to year, so it's not totally unusual for them to have a lot of reserves built up, but there's also been precedent where, especially in the last 10 years or so, where the state has said you have more net earnings with more reserves than you need, so that money's got to go back to the state. So some health plans like UCare have actually voluntarily said, hey, we've built up a lot of reserves. A lot of this money came from the public, from public programs, from managing Medicaid and Minnesota care, so we're going to send this additional extra money back to the state. That's like real leadership for the health plans.
Yeah. So at this point, as far as you know, that's not built into the, it seems that one of the ways to have made these nonprofit HMOs not seem like such a worthy target from for-profit healthcare profiteers is to not have $7 billion sitting there available to go and get, right? Like, couldn't they find, Could we find another way to protect those dollars so that they're like already called for and aren't just sort of in a reserve fund?
Right.
I'm sure they have rules. I'm not suggesting they don't have rules, but this just seems outrageous.
Right. I believe Blue Cross will have to give some money back to the state. There are some protections that were put in place the last 10 years or so, but if they're sending money to for-profit companies out of state, that kind of negates the laws that we have in place.
Are there any current stated legislators that you know who are publicly supportive of us going to for-profit companies to manage health insurance in Minnesota? Are there any that are statedly out for that?
It was interesting in 2017 because no senators, no Republicans would take credit for repealing the language. Nobody said, they all said it wasn't me, right. It wasn't me. But certainly there are many elected officials, many legislators, many Republicans who are insurance agents themselves representing us at the legislature. And certainly this is about a bigger fight between, are we going to go down the route of more corporate and for-profit health insurance companies, or are we going to expand public health insurance as a way to get to universal health care?
Okay, talk for another minute or so about that. Why do you see this as that is, like, it sounds like you said that the choice is to go for profit or go to universal single payer care.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen.
Why not just stay with nonprofit, chosen, nonprofit style that we currently have? Why does that seem to not be an option?
I think for one, that the health insurance companies have a lot of power. I would imagine that United Health Group has been quietly and persistently lobbying for this law to change for a long time because there's a lot of money to be made, especially managing public health insurance programs. What we've seen from Republicans is just a real being hell-bent on undermining Medicaid, cutting back on public health care programs, shoring up the failing private market with programs like reinsurance and our bailouts to health insurance companies as a way to avoid what I think is undeniable, that we will get to the point where we've got publicly funded health insurance that is in the public good and not for profit.
I see. Well, hey, thank you so much for raising this issue. We're going to go to a break. Can you stay over and tell us some of the other work that Take Action Minnesota is up to, or do you need to?
Absolutely. Sure.
Great. Okay. All right. So stick around, and we'll be back here with more conversations about what's going on at the state legislature and what ordinary people are doing about it here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
This is Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson, and you're listening to Doug, Brent Hunter, and Eric on Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Get out of the cold at Burger Mo's. Burger Monday Madness happens every Monday after 4 p.m., except on Excel event evenings, where you can order any burger with fries on the menu for just $6. Burger Mo's always offers fresh, never-frozen burger varieties, as well as delicious appetizers, soups, salads, and unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, desserts, two daily happy hours, and 60 beers on tap. Located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul with plenty of free parking and online at burgermo's.com.
On Tuesday, May 21st at 7:30 p.m., Temple Israel in Minneapolis invites you to join them for Voices 2019, their premier annual event. This year's voices will be Anna Navarro and Van Jones. Anna Navarro is a well-known Republican strategist, political analyst, and contributor to CNN and ABC's The View. And Van Jones is an activist, author, CNN political contributor, and host of CNN's Van Jones Show. This event will be moderated by Barack Obama-appointed ambassador to Morocco, Sam Kaplan. All are encouraged and welcome to attend this intriguing dialogue. General admission tickets are $50, and doors for general admission open at 7 p.m. Sponsorship opportunities are available for a private reception and dinner with the speakers prior to the program. Purchase a silver sponsorship to savor wine and hors d'oeuvres, or a gold sponsorship to enjoy wine and dinner with Anna and Van. Sponsorships start at just $500. Tuesday, May 21st is approaching quickly, and the event is selling out fast. Call and secure your seats today at 612-374-0342. Visit templeisrael.com/benefit for more information.
You know me as the carpet connoisseur of AM 950. At home, I have a whole zoo. 7 parakeets, 3 guinea pigs, and a chihuahua. Understand now why I'm such a big fan of Zero Res? They get rid of every splotch, every stain, every accident for my little critters. And before Zero Res, I used to move furniture to cover up my spots. Now my carpet is spectacular. Call Zero Res right now, 952-ZERO-RES, or go online at ZeroResMinnesota.com and say you want the AM 950 special. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. It's another Talking Head show where I'll first talk about Louis Hine, an early 20th century photographer and idealist whose photos were instrumental in creating social change around eliminating child labor in America. I'll also highlight Lena O. Smith, the first black colored female attorney in Minnesota who fought racial discrimination in housing. Good idealistic stuff. Ellie 2.0, engaging and real on AM 950.
Hi, this is Matt McNeil, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repit Stop to Do Pit Do right here on AM 950.
Yeah, welcome back to the Repartee. Hey, we're talking with Kenza from Take Action Minnesota. Kenza, thanks for being willing to stick around. Take Action Minnesota does more than just worry about making sure that we don't go down the trail of for-profit health insurance companies gouging the bank accounts of the nonprofits. You're involved in all kinds of efforts to try to bring about a better future here in Minnesota. Tell us a bit about what you do.
Yeah, so we are a multiracial, independent, progressive, statewide organization. We work on everything from healthcare to criminal justice reform, climate justice, tax reform. But right now, I think we're like still laser focused on healthcare, especially these last 6 days of the legislative session. I don't know if you've been following the budget negotiations at the Capitol.
Oh, we have, and griping and complaining about the process and the outcomes. Yeah, it drives us crazy around here that they wait till the last minute and then jam everything through and then say, hey, sorry, you know, at the end there we had to, we couldn't read all the bills. We just had to vote.
Yes, exactly. So we're in that point now, and we have been bringing our members to the Capitol to be talking about all sorts of healthcare issues, especially around the healthcare provider tax, which is set to sunset in 2019 at the end of the year. If you saw last night, Senate Leader Paul Gazelka said that the provider tax was off the table in budget negotiations, which was very surprising since that's one of the issues that Governor Walz has been clear that he won't sign a budget without the provider tax. There's 170 organizations that have signed on to support it, from nurses and advocates and service providers and disability advocates and hospitals, all talking about the importance of the provider tax, and that there's no way to cut $700 million from the state budget from healthcare funding without it hurting people. So I think we're going to see stories and voices and pressure ramping up at the Capitol, and are really quite surprised that 5-6 days out we're at this point.
Yeah, you're a seasoned veteran at this. You've seen this happen before. Do you think that, isn't that sad to say that you sort of are familiar with being 5 days out and $2 billion apart and just sort of think they're going to close the gap? How does this look to you? Do you feel like it's as it always is, or do you think it's somehow more contentious because the Senate Republicans are trying to do what they can to protect some, you know, have some modicum of power in the legislative process?
That's a great question. I've been telling people that I think whatever happens outside of the Capitol, so the people who are making phone calls, calling into their legislators, calling into the Senate Majority Leader, that will make a huge difference between now and May 20th. So I think that a deal could still get done and we could pull something out, but it will take people raising their voices and taking action, coming to the Capitol. We've got a rally at the Capitol for healthcare at 2 p.m. on Thursday, and it'll be right on the front steps of the Capitol, so anybody listening would be invited to join us and to know right. that real people showing up makes all the difference, because we shouldn't just have three elected officials locked in a room cutting deals for the entire state. Our voices should really be heard, and people who would be affected by cuts should be centered in those thoughts and negotiations.
Yeah. Okay. Kenza, can you explain a bit of that for people who might think that they want to go? Because I hope some listeners do, and they'll spread the word. 2 o'clock on Thursday. So I like the idea that people should raise their voices. But a lot of people think, well, if we're outside and the legislators are literally inside the building, inside of a room negotiating these deals, how do they know we're out there? So you, as the communications director with Take Action Minnesota, can you just share a bit about how it works and how you are confident that people showing up outside or showing up in a hearing room actually does affect the conditions under which the legislators are making their decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there comes a point where numbers don't mean anything, where it's just spreadsheets and numbers on a page, but it doesn't really tell the story at all. But legislators are paying attention to the phone calls that they're getting. They're paying attention to the emails. They're paying attention to their constituents when they get a tweet from them. They pay attention to the conversations that are on Twitter, that are on Facebook, and that really does bring eyes and ears to the Capitol, whether you can be there in person or whether you're at home or listening in greater Minnesota. that noise is so important. It's not noise, it's voices and stories, and really turns mm-hmm. the budgets and spreadsheets into people's lives, which is what politics is all about.
And I, the way I've imagined that it happens is it doesn't always cause some, you know, it's not going to cause a Republican senator to change his mind, but it could bolster a Democratic senator or Democratic House member to feel more encouraged and to lean in even harder and to stay consistent to the call that they're making. Is that a fair way to say it? That in some ways it boosts the people who need some boosting, even if it doesn't change the mind of someone on the other side?
Absolutely. It can change the mind, but certainly it's important to know that for the people who are fighting so hard for healthcare and education and community prosperity for Minnesotans, that they've got people who've got their backs and who are supporting them. I'd remind people of the big healthcare fights in Congress to protect the Affordable Care Act and how important it was for people just interrupting business as usual or telling their stories at every opportunity that really made the difference to the big healthcare fight in D.C. And that's similar boat that we are on now.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, the work that you all do and others, because you can think that a member of the legislature can sort of become a person that you feel like has a lot of power and is kind of distant from you, and you're sure that they are, you know, operating in a world that you don't really know and understand. But on the other hand, you meet these people and you realize they're just ordinary people like the rest of us, right? And they really are swayed and influenced by pressure and peer pressure and societal comments. And they're much more influenceable than influenceable. Thank you, influenceable than we often would think. You know, if you feel sort of disempowered by the system.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got a citizen legislature, so it's made up not of professional politicians, but of teachers and nurses and doctors and insurance agents and homemakers and people from all walks of life who are just there to represent their communities.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to say it, because I've been yelling at them for 2 days that they need to get their work done 2 weeks ago so you can have time to look at the bills and read them. So it's good to say they're just regular people. Well, Kenza, thanks so much for all your great work and for spending a little time with us this afternoon helping us understand.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it.
You bet. It is AM 950's Minnesota Progressive Repartee in the afternoons. Hey, Hunter and Brett got it covered for the next couple of days. Well, I'll talk to you on Friday.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.